it's about 70% January, meaning that it is then added on our numbers, you know, to be saved by the end of the third quarter. So we couldn't. The reason is that we received 40,000 applications. In that there were boxes all over in corridors in the department. We were not able to process all of these by the 31st of March. The processes are underway to fill this post. It's a total of 143 posts that are aimed at improving the capacity of the department to support the migration of staff. The third target here is the average period it takes to award a bid from the middle of the journey and the draft bid certification from the program manager. We are also unable to meet the target of 2 months. Initially, our target was 5 months, five and a half months, to be quite precise. The reason for our inability to meet the target, one is that the quality of the certification that you know, are submitted to the bid adjudication committee, in most cases, we've had to send them back, you know, for review or for improvement. And we as a department have actually realized that we need to, you know, train our managers on the development of certification, and that delays the process of approval. But secondly, Chairperson, there is a challenge because of the shortage or the incapacity of departments, the inavailability of members who sit in committees, in particular in this education committee. Our directors are overstretched and it becomes difficult for them to be available on time, you know, to sit on education committees. There are measures in place to person to address this. We are putting this as a key result area in the settlement agreement of senior managers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and all of the members. My name is Raina Sintima. I'm presenting Proposal 2, which is the civil rights registration in development, implementation, and local and environmental policies, and the land preservation strategy in South Africa. As with the program one, this program also did not have specific delivery targets in respect to the third quarter of the financial year. However, for the quarter ending 31 March 2015, that's the fourth quarter, there were three targets, two of which were achieved and one not achieved within the specified time frame. The performance indicators in respect to the three targets are as follows. The first one is in respect to the percentage of public institutional data integration into education and training management information systems, according to the specifications list of fields as approved by the Head Minister Committee. The target in this respect was 100%. This target was achieved as 50 public TVET colleges, the higher education institutions and the one teachers, data was actually integrated into the information system. The second performance indicator is a draft and final career development policy and information strategy developed, consulted, and gazetted. However, for this financial year in particular, the target in the fourth quarter was to produce a draft policy, which was to be communicated and consulted with stakeholders by this This target was also achieved as the strategy was produced, communicated, and consulted with the stakeholders. The third performance indicator relates to the engagement plan with international counterparts, particularly in our quest of strengthening the bilateral relations with priority countries in Africa, Middle East, South and North. The target was to produce an engagement plan and produce a report as far as its implementation is concerned. This target, unfortunately, was not achieved within the time frame due to the quality assurance processes within the department. However, it was subsequently achieved by 8 April 2013. That's all for program 2, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Next one.
Thank you. Ms. Diane Parker, CDG University Education. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I'm going to report on the University Education Program 3 progress. And just in terms of the third quarter, for that quarter, we had 9 specific APP targets, 6 of which were achieved and 3 which were not achieved. And for the quarter ending 31st of March, we had 14 targets, 13 of which were achieved and 1 not achieved. If we go through the specific targets, most of them were linked to enrollment learning targets in the system. So the first one is the number of students enrolled in higher education, which was achieved. The target was 983,698. That's what we actually achieved, which is over the number that had been identified in the target. The first time enrollments in universities, however, was not achieved. The total number achieved was 158,389, whereas the target had been 178,000. This was for the 2013 academic year and verified in October 2014. The reason for this underachievement is linked to UNISA's first time entry enrollment. What we found was that they had for the first time applied their enrollment, their admission requirements, and therefore had only allowed a certain number in, and normally they would have just been completely open in terms of their access process. So this did result in UNISA underachieving on their specific targets, and that had the overall result for the system. I want to just point out that this, in fact, was related to the concerns that the department and the minister had already indicated to UNISA around their throughput and the need for them to improve their success rate in distance education. So while the target has not been achieved, it was responsive to the situation. Another thing I'd like to indicate is that in terms of the ministerial statement on enrollment planning, institutions have been requested, once they have agreed on a target, to come within 2% of the actual target. And if they do not do this, they would be penalized in terms of their teaching input units 2 years following this, and therefore that will be applied to UNISA going forward, and we hope that this will enable UNISA in the future to be more accurate in terms of their planning. We do expect institutions to plan as best as they can and to be fairly accurate, giving them that 2% variation in terms of the target. Going on then, in terms of the other targets, the number of African students enrolled in universities, that was also overachieved. You'll see there 689,503 African students were enrolled in universities as opposed to the 676,000 target. The number of female students, we also found a higher number of female students enrolling in higher education as opposed to the target. I'd like to point out that this is an issue in the system and that the department is looking into it, because at the moment we are almost at 60% enrollment of female students in the system, which is a little out of kilter with the population statistics, the general population statistics, where we have about 54% females in the general population. So while it is to be applauded that females are coming to higher education, we also do need to be concerned about what's happening to our young males in the system. Going on to the next one, this is in terms of the proportion of enrollments in science, engineering, technology, business, science, and humanities. We have set the target of 29-29-42 ratio, but did not achieve this. You'll see there that there are more, a greater proportion enrolled in humanities than in business sciences, And this really was linked to the issue of increases in teacher education. We have been putting a lot of focus on improving the outputs of teacher education, and as part of humanity, this has ended up in a slight skewing from the original targets that were in place. We go forward then in terms of the public higher education institutions established. We plan for one university to be established, and it's certainly well established. That's Arthur MacArthur Health Sciences University. The next one, a monitoring report on the use of earmark grants to support development of each of the newly established universities. This is really quite important because we've put a lot of effort into the development of these new universities, and a substantial funding that's going into it. And therefore, we felt it was really important to focus on monitoring. This target was achieved, and there is a report which indicates how the funds were utilized. The number of universities supported to offer programs for TVET college lecturers in line with the new TVET lecturer qualification policy. You will recall that we published a new TVET qualification lecturer policy, and we went out to encourage universities to be involved in this. We expected that it would be mostly UOT with some comprehensive, but in fact we've ended up with a very good response from the system, with 18 universities indicating their interest. However, only 2 universities managed to put in and submit new programs for approval for their program qualification, lecturer accreditation, CHE. Now, the reason for this really was that we were hoping universities would support this development without additional funding, but they really did require support, and we were not able to provide them support in time. However, we have solved that problem now. The EDW CETA is supporting the development of an advanced diploma, which 18 universities are involved in. We will be looking at a diploma that will be designed across the system, and then all these universities will apply for accreditation to offer that diploma. At the same time, we've also managed to get funding from the European Union Budget Support Program going forward this year, a quite substantial funding that will support our institutions to really develop the TVET and teacher education section. So we are being pleased with that, although we didn't meet the target last year. The National Policy on Professional Qualifications for Educators, that was completed and published, and we are now in the process with various institutions to develop qualifications in relation to that. The amount in rand value of infrastructure grants dispersed, 2.2 billion, was dispersed to various universities for the infrastructure programs across the system. And in terms of that, we also did a in-depth monitoring report on the effective use of the grants by each university, and their target was achieved. The total number of students in foundation provisioning programs, that target was also achieved and exceeded. You'll see there we managed to enroll 17,960 students within these programs. In terms of the success rate in higher education studies at public institutions, the target that had been set in our APP was 76%. The target that was achieved was 74%. But what we discovered when we went back to the ministerial statement on enrollment planning is that there possibly was a human error in our putting the 76% target in our APP, because the ministerial statement itself said that universities would achieve a 74.5% overall. So all we can say is that somehow we managed to put the wrong target in there. It should have possibly been a 74%, because that's what the universities have committed themselves to. So that is an error on our part. In terms of the next target, which was the monitoring report on outputs of STEM skills, that report was produced. We've checked on all of the STEM skills, specifically engineering, teacher education, human and animal health sciences, as well as physical and life sciences. And we followed those and are monitoring those targets going through. The annual report on the financial health of each university with recommendations for improvement. This was also finalized. in fact, if you, we had developed a financial health indicators during the year, and we utilized those in order to look at this issue of the financial health of the various institutions. An annual monetary report on the compliance of private higher education institutions. This was also achieved. The number of postgraduates. The target achieved was 50,773, which is also a higher number than the target that had been suggested by universities. We think this is important because it means that the institutions are actually doing better than they thought they would do in terms of their output, which means better graduation rates than were expected. In terms of the number of doctoral graduates, you can see the target is 1,950 and the actual number of these is 2,051. Also good news for the system. The next one is around a policy on the measurement of research outputs of universities. This has been now finalised and approved, and it has been published in the Government Gazette, so their target was achieved. And then last, the next one was the annual report on improved research productivity of universities. This was also achieved and distributed to all the institutions and published on the website. The next one links to the HEMIS system, the number of updates on the HEMIS audited student data. The two updates for the 22 universities was achieved in October 2014, and the update for the 23 universities on space data was also achieved in October 2014. And that brings me to the end of the report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Parker, for the program and the progress reported.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to the honourable members. My name is Thembisa Sifane from the VISA branch. I'm going to leave a presentation on Program 4. The purpose of Program 4 is to plan, develop, evaluate, monitor and maintain national policy programs, assessment, practices and systems for vocational and continuing education and training, including our technical and vocational education and training colleges and post-literacy adult education and training. For a quarter ending 31 December 2014, which was the third quarter, there were no specific delivery targets to report on. And for the quarter ending 31 March 2015, which is the fourth quarter, there were five targets that the branch had to achieve. Out of those, one was achieved and one was not achieved. And in relation to the specific targets, I can start with the first one, which indicates the number of TV College annual headcount enrollments on ministerially approved and occupationally directed programs in the academic year. The target was 800,000 for the headcount enrollments in colleges, and the actual performance was 709,533 students' headcount enrollments that have been recorded. Chairperson, we have also noted with concern the concern raised by yourself and the committee in relation to the targets that have not been achieved. And if we are allowed to indicate that on the first one, one of the reasons why this target of 800,000 was not achieved was because of insufficient student and program funding, and also in terms of limitations regarding to resources, and that would include infrastructure and also limitations pertaining to lecturers. In terms of ensuring that going forward we are able to meet this target, the department is continuously submitting bids for additional funding, and of course Chairperson and the honourable members will be aware of the efforts by the department in terms of increasing infrastructure. We talk about the building of the 12 new campuses, and that includes the refurbishment of two existing college campuses that are currently underway, and we do believe that will go a long way in assisting us in achieving the targets. Pardon me. In terms of the second one, the certification rate in exit levels, and that relates to Report 191 and to the NCV qualifications in the academic year. In terms of the NCV, the target of 57% was not achieved. It was 34% achieved. N1 to N3, that target was exceeded by 9.5%. And in terms of N6, the target was 50% and 42.7% was achieved. Chairperson, related to the NCV programs, part of the reason why the target of the certification was not achieved is that NCV programs consist of 7 subjects in an academic year or at any given time that a student must complete successfully to be certified. And Chairperson, our analysis of the exam reports for the past academic year of the financial year in which we are reporting is that the subject pass rates are on average 80%, where the students are underperforming is in mathematics. And as a result of the fact that they need to pass 7 out of 7 subjects in order for them to be certified and not perform well in mathematics, it then affects the entire certification rate. So that is one of the main reasons why that target was not possible to be achieved. And in relation to the N6, which was also the other target that was not achieved, our analysis was the fact that we have noted the absence of sound curriculum documents and support in relation to the N6 programs and no capacity to support such. And that includes, Chairperson, the screening of textbooks for the Report 191 program. In consultation with the Quality Council for Occupations and Trades, the department is working on closing this gap, and we are confident that with time we will be able to make inroads in this regard. This has also been affected, of course, by the fact that there was a time when we were working on phasing out the N programs, and that has delayed some of the work that has been achieved by this time in this regard. Chairperson, in relation to the third one, which talks to the pass rate in NCV levels 2 to 4, maths and mathematical literacy programs in academic year, if we look at the mathematics for the fourth quarter, the target was 52%. And 47.2% was achieved, and for NCV level 3, the target of 46%, that one was achieved, and the target of NCV level 4, 56%, that was not achieved. Only 35% was achieved in that regard. Again, this talks to the challenges that we have in relation to mathematics in the system, and Chairperson, although we don't want to apportion, and we do not apportion any blame, but we do understand that this is a challenge even that comes from the foundational levels or grades that these students are coming up with. And we have seen progressive improvement in relation to the performance of the students in the mathematics. In relation to mathematical literacy, the target for NCV level 2 was 72%, and 70.5% was achieved. Level 3, 82%, that target was achieved, and NCV level 4, the target was 87%, and 78.7% was achieved. The mathematical literacy gives us an indication that the students seem to be performing much better in mathematics literacy compared to mathematics. Chairperson, in relation to the certification rate for bursary recipients enrolled in the Report 191 and in the SEV, the reasons would be the same in terms of the certification rate for the NCV. However, Chairperson, for NCV level 4, you will note that whilst the target certainly was not achieved, because for NCV level 4 it was 59% and 39% was achieved, but compared to the previous presentation on the general certification rate, you see that this cohort of students have performed a little bit higher than the national average. And N1 to N3, as well as N4 to N6, the target in this regard has not been achieved. The department has performed an audit in relation to the bursaries, the bursary recipients, and monitored the process to get to the root of the cause of the underperformance in this area. And what has been picked up in many instances as an outcome of this audit, which I'm referring to, is the fact that despite the Department of Higher Education and Training bursary guidelines on the administering of the bursaries, there are quite a significant number of the colleges that do not administer according to the guidelines, which link financial need to academic performance. And in that regard, we have put measures to ensure that there is strict adherence so that financial need can be linked to academic performance. On the last one, Chairperson, on the number of institutions identified for declaration as community colleges, there was a target of 9 public institutions identified for establishment as community colleges and approved by the Minister by the 31st of March 2014. And we are pleased to report that that target has been achieved. Chairperson and honourable members, please allow me to just take a step back and go back to the first one, where we indicated the target of 800,000 not having been achieved. We just want to highlight and indicate that the target of 709,573, which has been achieved in the previous academic year, has increased from 326,889, which was the actual headcount enrollment in 2010. Just to highlight that while the target has not been achieved, there's also not been a decrease over the years. There has been a significant increase from 2010 up to where we are today. But we have noted the concerns raised by the chairperson and certainly by the honorable members, and we are putting all our efforts and our resources in correcting these shortcomings. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Well, thank you for the presentation on program 4. We will now move on to program 5.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, and the leader of the delegation of the Department of Higher Education and Training. I'm Zukile Christopher Mushereba Fomvan, the Acting Deputy Director General, Skills Development Branch, 120 St. Francis Park, Prison, Victoria.
Now we know where to find.
The purpose of the program, honorable Chairperson, is to promote and monitor the National Skills Development Strategy, develop skills development policy and regulatory framework. For the quarter ended 31st December 2014, which is the third quarter, there were three targets, one achieved and two not achieved. That was basically due to trade test centers where upon they were not available at the time for us to conduct an audit, as well as the reports that were submitted later by our sitters. For the quarter ending 31st March 2015, which is the fourth quarter, six targets were set, three achieved and three not achieved. Then also that was around mismatch between the evidence and reported targets to the department. But then I can confirm, Chairperson, with our unaudited annual report that we have met all these targets as their annual targets. Number one, that is slide 26, number of artists and candidates registered nationally. Our third quarter target was 5,500, of which we achieved 4,641. So the target was not achieved. Fourth quarter target was 13,000, the actual performance target achieved was 10,797. Number two, number of artisan countries found competent nationally. Third quarter, the target was 2.5. The actual achievement was 3,747, meaning to say that target was achieved. On the fourth quarter, the target was 4,000. Target was not achieved, as it was 3,988. On the number of graduates and students receiving structured workforce training, on the fourth quarter, the target was 37,000. That target has been achieved as far as unaudited reports in our annual report currently. Number four, percentage of national artists and learners pass rate test. The fourth quarter was 48%. The target was achieved at 55%. Number five, number of projects conducted at CETA or DCTO accredited trade test centers. Third quarter target was 15. Targets not achieved as it was 13. Fourth quarter target was 20, the target was not achieved, and it was 10. Six, number of tutored colleges with partnerships agreements with CITAS. The last quarter, which is the fourth quarter, the target was 30, and the target was achieved at 37. Thanks very much, honorable chairperson.
Well, thank you for the presentation on this on program 5, which is first development. Mr. Patel, you want to
thank you, sir. I'll hand over to the CFO. Sure. Thank you, Acting DJ and Chairperson. If you look at slide 27, slide 27 as well as 28 and 29 just give a summary of what happened by the end of the third quarter. The spending of the department at the end of the third quarter was 11.131 billion for that quarter. That was a decline of 14.9% on the spending during the second quarter, and the main reason for the decline was the payments of subsidies and grants to higher education institutions. Also put a number of cost-cutting measures in place to ensure that we do not overspend, and at that stage we already identified a number of areas where overspending was possible. The slide number 28 and 29 reflects the financial data per program and the economic classification. If you can just look at slide 28, just to indicate that during the third quarter the adjusted appropriation took place, and you will see that there is a decline between the adjusted appropriation total of 50.066 billion compared to the main appropriation of 50.306. That decline, 240 million, is for the direct charges, flagged as item number 6 under the programs. And that downward trend is based on the estimates by National Treasury on revenue collection for levy payments. So that is something out of our control, and that is something that's dealt with between National Treasury and SARS. But at that stage, they have a downward projection of levy collections of 240 million rand. You will also see then, as I indicated, under Program 3 University Education, the substantial decline in the spending specifically on that program for the third quarter, that was 5.4 billion compared to the 3.4 for the first 6 months of the financial year. On slide 29, just to flag the high spending already at the stage of the end of December on compensation of employees, 80.4%, and that is mainly because of the payments to examiners and moderators, which is included within the standard chart of account as compensation of employees, and then for the high percentage. The amount for transfer payments provinces, that is the TVET college conditional grant that was still applicable last year. On slide number 30 and 31, just a brief summary of the fourth quarter. The total spending for the fourth quarter was 5.783 billion, which is a decline of 48% from the spending that we had in the third quarter, and mainly because of, again, once of the conditional of the subsidy programs for universities already paid by that stage. We identified already, as I indicated during the third quarter, that we may have problems in certain areas, and as a result of the limited funds that we have available for operations, we already started to apply environment cross programs to ensure that we do not have any overspending. The DG also implemented additional cost containment measures during January. There were reprioritization performed. In total, we reprioritized 13.7 million rand, and that was especially to address, apart from the normal operational activities, also the need in the department to fund the TV college and adult education training function shifts and operations that were required already at that point in time. You'll see on slide number 31 that we reprioritized a total of 13.7 million specifically then for those purposes. The third bullet on slide number 31 gives an indication of the final outcome of the 2014-15 financial year. We'll see that we unspent about 1.160 million rand, and those are mainly due to some vacant positions, and we also had some other small savings throughout the department, including money for the Higher Education Management Information System. If you look at slide 32, that gives you the fourth quarter spending per program, and you can see there the unspent amount of 1.160 referred to. Just also to flag, Honourable Chairperson members, that you see now a change in the adjusted appropriation compared to what we had in slide number 28. Now, once again, this is as a result of the skills levies, And as I indicated, the skills levies we are subject to what we provide and paid, what is collected by SARS and what is estimated by National Treasury. So it is totally out of our hands. And during the third quarter, there was again an upward adjustment of the levy payments. So where we have in the adjusted appropriation a downward adjustment of 240 million, there was a new upward adjustment during the third quarter. So a further increase of 638 million or a net increase from the initial main appropriation of 398 million on levy revenue. So that is the difference there. The net effect for the department is basically zero because we almost like play post office with that money. What is received in terms of the levies are from our side transferred to the CSOs and the UNICEF. Slide number 33 just provides the information per economic classification, and there you can see how the unspent amount of 1.16 is distributed between the various items. Chairperson, that is the financial information. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for the financial performance report for the two quarters, the third and the fourth quarter of the 2014 financial year. I just want to also refer to members, when we agreed on the presentation, we agreed on the presentation also on the development of the national services law. That's separate and this is because of the. Shall we then reflect on the presentation and then we engage in a robust because we want improvement where improvement needs, you know, to be seen. Right, Honourable Member Kassim, Honourable Member Gillian, Honourable Member Mbunu, Honourable Member Buroli, Professor Buroli, Honourable Member Mgalime, Honourable Nusole, you have no.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I want to start with the university education function, particularly around the first-time enrollments, which of course is perhaps the one that stands out. The explanation that was given was that it was linked to an admissions policy at Geneva, if I understand correctly. I just want the DDG Chair to please elaborate on that a little bit further, because I find it a little bit confusing. On the one hand, I hear, well, the department had indicated that there was a problem with the throughput rate, and therefore we have to tighten up. On the other hand, tightening up is now affecting first-time enrollments. So, you know, either way, you know, this is going to be a loose in a situation. We don't want to set up students to fail, but we want to increase access to higher education and training. So just some more information on that admissions policy and what was the throughput rate before that, what is the targeted throughput rate at a particular university. Of course, you know that it is the biggest university who takes the most number of students. So it is very concerning when there are issues in that regard. But I want to also know to what extent is that really down to UNICEF's admissions policy. And on the other hand, to what extent is it to a shortfall in funding of students? Okay? And if the DGC can give us figures as to the number of those that qualify for NSFAS funding or qualify for NSFAS funding at a percentage that could not be funded because there was insufficient funds in that particular regard, so that we can understand to what extent is it really about UNISA and to what extent is it really about a shortage, because it's well covered that there is, and been told to us by the department that there is a shortage, and to what extent is that. I also just want to understand better, Chair, the definition of the success rate, because there was a failure to meet a target in the success rate, and there was an explanation given, or maybe the target wasn't quite correct, it should be 72.5%, whatever the case may be. What is that success rate? Is it the same as the throughput rate? To define it a bit better, then moving into the vocational training function here, and I'm leaving this with the enrollments target over the MTSF periods. Same goes for university education, same goes for the tier college education. There's specific targets that have been set by 2018 and by 2019. And I'm directing this question to the acting DG, if I can say, call it as such. How confident is the department, given the low number of enrollments as per target? And can even link this to the skills training branch, actually, because even then, in terms of the number of artisans that are registered, way below the targets that should be registered. And the targets are as follows. We're supposed to be at 1.238 million enrollments or headcount enrollments by 2018 in the vocational branch, and we should be at 24,000 artisans registered nationally by 2019, and yet, you know, we're not meeting current targets at the moment, and there's no guarantee that we're going to meet it in future years. We could just end up falling further and further behind. So what's the point of setting these targets and we're not able to meet them across different functions? And will we be able to actually meet these targets by the, you know, over that period? So that's the question that's directed at the department. I also want to just get better definitions, Chair, on the certification rates versus the pass rates within the vocational space. There's a very big problem there, and we've been told that, well, it's down to the type of subject in mathematics in particular. But the problem is actually quite large. If we look at the targets themselves, in terms of certification rates and pass rates, they're not high targets. It's not like we are aiming for very, very high targets in any case. And then we're still not meeting those targets. So we've got a case with a reasonable target that's been set, and the targets are not being met. And my question here, Chair, is that during the 2013-2014 annual report, there was an action plan to address student underperformance and certification rates. What happened to that action plan? Because there was a number of things that were included and interventions that was included there, which included lecture training, use of learning tools to develop cognitive skills, etc., etc. Why is this plan implemented? What is the success of that plan? Why is it that we are still not meeting those targets? And I just want to define to us better what does the certification rate actually mean? What does the pass rate actually mean? Sorry, Chair, we reviewing the departments like five different functions. It's impossible to fit it into three questions as you normally give us.
Start with three questions and then we give another check. So that all the members can speak and then they respond and then I give you another check. And then so that we have enough time of engagement with the department, just short and important. Thank you. The next speaker is the honorable member Sidian.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to make a comment just to express before I just pose the question. Chair, I was looking on the departmental website to see if there are any additional sort of information on the third and fourth quarter reports, but I couldn't find it. No problem. The only problem is that I do want to suggest when we receive these reports, the deviation from, and the reason for the deviation from the target set should actually be included in one of the columns. It's very difficult to sit in a presentation and then to listen carefully to what is offered as possible reasons for underachievement. But I do believe it's important that it is a written document so that we can next year take up our documentation of today and see did they in fact address the problem that was identified as one of the underlying reasons for underachievement. So I just want to pose that as a point of departure. Second point is generally, now I'm saying generally because it's not true for program 5, but for the first programs, it's with the exception of program 3, university education, where they actually set targets for the third term, that you can in fact see better performance at the end of the fourth term. And I just want to say, is it not perhaps wise to keep accurate tabs
throughout, so that you have to break down the annual target per term in order to timely make interventions to achieve the targets at the best term. So I just want to say that it is interesting to see the program and to see how they report and to see in those cases, and it may be, as I say, it may be general if I say that, but it appears to me to be true. Jean, I just want to ask, if we look specifically now, I'm concerned with Program 1, because if our administration function is clearly wobbly because of number of vacant posts or unavailability to sit in the bit of education, etc., etc., that is an indication of, can I call it, crisis management. And I'm just concerned because ultimately you can keep it up for so long, but what is the department going to do about that? If your program 1 and program 2, the planning, component of the department is not functioning well, so what interventions will be made there?
That's the second question?
Yeah. Well, that's my question. That's my first question, Jeff.
Well, the first question was, why not put targets and where the targets should be in such? That corner? Was that a second comment?
That was a comment.
Second comment.
That was actually a comment. Jay, now, the second question is in relation to university education. It's good that you have 14 targets. I just want to ask, your target 5, does that speak to the NDP, the number of people that we have to put through our system in order to achieve the targets for scientists and all of those, if I can elaborate on that? Because, Jay, I don't share the same concern with regards to the female-male sort of combination, because, unfortunately, whether it's planned or not, but females very often, after qualifying, first go and become mothers and then after return to their jobs for which they have been qualified. So we will have, it's true that it doesn't speak to our nation, but you must remember, it's just one of those practical, eventualities that we have to also plan for. So we have to train more females so that at least some of them will return to become professionals again. Okay, then my third and last question, Chair, is just, I'm really concerned about vocational and continuing education and training. Targets and the underachievement there is certainly not speaking of a program that is well managed, and I understand at present it is sort of by remote control, but we need serious interventions there. Although they are not very far from some of the targets, for instance, in target 1, but still, I'm concerned about mathematics. Now, there was a mention made of not apportioning in blame at foundation level. What engagement are the department planning, will the department be planning for interaction with the Department of Basic Education and Training to make sure that mathematics training in foundation phases, etc., impact, improve? Because we've seen during recent years not good success rates in the matric pass rates, etc. And we cannot adjust the system in tertiary education unless there is also improvement in the foundation phase. Is there anything that is planned there? Is it falling back on teacher qualifications and teacher training? How does the department respond on that? Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Kian. I will now ask Honourable Member Kunu to come in.
Thank you, Chair. Let me thank the Department for the presentation. And on administration, with regard to the progress on the current EDG vacancies, I would like to know what is happening, because there were vacancies for university education this session, so just to know what is happening around that area.
I think of great concern to us all is the non-achievement of public. For, I mean, especially with the administration, I want to know what impact does this have on, what impact does non-implementation of the ICT government framework have on the operations of the department. Lastly, on university education, I was looking at the number of doctoral graduates target and were happy that the department has achieved on that for 2051. One thing that is not mentioned is the field of study. What fields of studies are these where doctoral degrees were achieved? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Mkunu. I will now pass to Professor Bumuli. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Belinda Padoni, committee member. So, you know, everyone's going on about these targets that haven't been met, and I'm not sure whether it's right for us to just say, well, guys, we've got to work harder and try and meet the targets. Because 100,000 students too few seem to suggest to me that maybe there's something wrong with the targets. And I have an even deeper concern. And that is that the department may well have reached the limits of possibility that it's able to meet, given A, the terrible schooling system, and B, its own internal underfunding and therefore inadequate staff. So if you've got to the point where executives don't have time to sit on tender committees, thus holding up the TZ colleges, 100,000 too few students come into colleges to do skills education, because of the schooling system, presumably, and also because the new TZ colleges aren't being built. New students in universities seem to be falling, and I'm not sure, again, along with Mr. Katsin, that this can only be attributed to UNISA putting in entrance requirements, but even if it is UNISA putting in entrance requirements, that again points to the schooling system being unable to deliver the kind of students we need. Why did they have to put in entrance requirements? Because the students they were getting were so weak, they were all failing. The very low targets you have in the college sector, again, seem to indicate that your pass rates are doomed to sometimes be below 50% because, again, of the inadequate schooling. And the fact that you're lamenting the inadequacies of mathematics, well, it's very nice. A little bit of schadenfreude for me as somebody coming from the university sector to at last see the department itself having to face the fact of the schooling system not delivering students able to really cope with higher education. I worry that you're letting them do your math literacy because that's basically just arithmetic, not really math. So I think that's a pop-out. So that's an opening comment. Questions, why the fall in levies in the National Skills Fund and CETA sector, that's very worrying. Is it part of this non-payment culture that we're seeing in the society as a whole? Two, I think the lack of young men in higher education, we're beginning to see it in senior school levels as well, is a very serious problem. It's something that's happening in the US as well and is being specifically addressed by programs designed to bring young men into education. Because it's seen as part of a kind of societal failure that young men are drop out very young and become gangsters and all sorts of other terrible things. The key that's not being built, can I just ask whether the problem in tender evaluation is what is affecting the lack of a TVET, new TVET being built? And then my last question is, can we please have copies of some of the reports that you mentioned in your presentation where you say you have met a target, reports have been issued, and I'm just wondering if we could have a copy of some of those reports, for example, an annual report on the financial health of each university, a report on annual monitoring report on the outputs of scarce skills, and there are a couple of others there where you say there's a report, and I think those would be really useful just for us to see. Thank you.
Thank you, Belinda. Thank you, Professor Kozoli. We now move on to Honorable Member Kadme.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first start by welcoming the presentation of the department. And my questions will be on program number 4. The 2014-2019 medium-term strategic framework is targeting a total number of 1.2 million by 2018, and already there's a shortfall of 100,000. And why there's a high demand in the TVET? And then will the MTF target of 1.2 million be achieved by 2018? That is my question. And what mitigation plans are put in place to make sure that these targets are realized? And again, besides NSFAS, what are other factors that are affecting the program not to achieve? On program number 5, skills development, what were the costs of not achieving set targets on the number of artisan candidates registered nationally for both quarters? What are your mitigation plans to make sure that the targets are achieved? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Member Gagne. I will now call upon Honorable Member Bata.
Thanks, Chairperson. I also like to welcome the presentation. What worries me, Chair, is that the higher education environment is actually receiving what I would call a lot of positive attitude around young people. I think there is the sense that young people are picking up on the environment and they see these opportunities. I think also the display by the department to try achieve a college is encouraging. But I think there are also systematic things that are coming up. And I will not necessarily comment based on the program per se. But let me say the following. If we are going to be bringing into the system thousands of young people into an environment of these various policies, whose environment is still up until today has not been properly cautioned to re-welcome them. I'm saying this because you do find that the majority of our young people in this environment is happy. They still choose courses according to what they think is going to be easy to get in and get out. So they're not connecting with the future needs of the country. Now the problem with that is we're going to be not noticing the forward frustrations that are going to be happening in the next years or in the next day when majority of the youngsters will be confronted by unemployment and they will not even have a future prospect, maybe for a year, precisely because of over demand in other areas and under demand in the rest. So my caution is let the department reanalyze the environment. Establish if we are pulling the right numbers in the right what I'll call direction program, and also the environment is properly supported. You might remember this environment was closed down by a famous professor, and you need to reason what is going on there. Is the quality meeting the opportunities of the country? Are we getting the correct youngsters? Will they stand the test of day? That's my first problem. I appreciate that the department also cautions itself with the problems that it encounters, in particular in the administration. You must also understand, personally, I was expecting it, because you must remember you are one of those fastest growing departments. you were just re-established to be a caucus party. So you are picking up a lot. And sometimes you will also be picking up wrong people as a result of the speed you are using to find people. So as a result, you are going to find that you advertise positions, you interview people, you will still maybe not wish to make appropriate appointments because of the disappointment of the caliber of people you find. But also, in the instances where you are going to be hiring people, you are going to find that as a result of them not being ready, they will also resign very quickly and hence re-advertisement again. So for a while, I think you are going to be in a stage of what I would call stop-go. Precisely because I don't think we have sufficient numbers, in particular black Africans. Besides those who come from the universities, but who come on the sections of specializing environment, who can assist, you know, various specialty areas in administration. But I think also you need to acknowledge if there is going to be a problem, share with the people. Are we still going to find these extra track campuses delivered on time, the TVET campus? Because if we are not able to facilitate progress in your executive meetings where you adjudicate opportunities, it also has a lot to do with the delivery on time of those institutions. That's basically what I would like to caution you. Chair, on the UNISA side, as an example, not necessarily as the only. I know of the University of Technology that this year could not take more than 3,000 students precisely because they were always. That is the Vale University of Technology. And to share 3,000 students out of the system, maybe it is not them alone, but if we analyze correctly, you may find that because of lack of financing, our students, in particular second year and third year, they are dropping out with good results. But because the system cannot take them anymore, they don't have money to pay for themselves, and there aren't enough resources in the system, so what happens? They just withdraw if they cannot pay for themselves. So those are what I would call intervening things that require an analysis, so that when our young people are angry with us, we must know why they are angry and must provide appropriate assistance to assist them go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Mbatha. Well, to the officials who have been listening to me, we will now hand over to Mr. Patel to lead us in response to the questions raised.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'll just take a few that were directed to me. Program managers will respond and then I'll come back to see if we haven't missed anything. I think firstly, I want to indicate the context in which we're sitting with this third of quarter reports. They are the last of the strategic plan 2019. We started from the next strategic plan. We started this year, 1st of April, with a new five-year period, so I just wanted to indicate part of the context. The NGSF targets that were quoted, the 1.238 for VSET, the 1.07 million for university, and 24,000 for skills. They were targets of 2019-20. We still have four more financial years to go. We are in the green with the university enrollment because they are projected on the funds that we have within the medium-term strategic framework, except for the 2 years that we don't know what our economy is like or whether there will be an adjustment. But in terms of the pattern of our current MTSF, the university numbers will be achieved. In regard to skills, we also have those 3 or 4 years, which is 2019-20, is to get about 5 or 6 of the teachers checked up to be able to ensure that they deliver in regards to the plan for the afternoon. Chairperson, in regards to recess, the 1.238 million by 2019-20, I must say there's also time because it's an empty target. However, there is very little hope in terms of projecting our current funding in the MTSS towards that particular target unless something drastically happens in the budgeting and appropriation processes. So that is in danger. I will come back to some of the others. Colleagues will answer them. I answer the one on university NDP targets. We are definitely on track to make the 2030 target of 1.62 million. Given our current trajectory of funding, that is for universities. In regard to mathematics and basic education, Chairperson, we have a joint committee between our two deputy ministers working with for basic education in regards to mathematics issues. But simply I must say that the picture is very, very gloomy in regards to mathematics at basic education. They themselves have admitted it, especially in terms of the latest annual national assessment particular result. And I must say that a really drastic action is required by both departments in terms of how to deal with it. Chairperson, Mr. Mkuna, Honourable Member, I don't know if you were here last portfolio committee, but we now sort of 2 DDGs because Dr. Parker has been appointed as our DDG university. So we are 2. Mr. Mbombo will tell us where we are in regards to that particular process. CFO will come in with the levy, but I just want to indicate that in terms of the direct charges to the direct charges in terms of CETAs, it is basically an estimation in regards to the state of the economy. So for example, if you look at this year, the projected revenue was 9%, but let's see how the economy grows. So it's the number of companies that are existing, that are not insolvent, etc. So it's because based on actual payroll, those are projected numbers in terms. So we cannot be, it only becomes fruition after the revenue collection year ends. There was another one meeting the MTS of Tunis indicated that. Can I just ask program managers to respond to the specifics in their areas?
Program one.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll deal with the question on the vacancy rate. There was a concern that our vacancy rate seems to be high. I would like to reassure the committee that the vacancy rate of 10%, Chairperson, is actually within the set benchmarks within the GPSA. We would like, as a department, to reduce that to 5% as it has been the target. Can I also report that by the end of the third quarter, we actually stood at 7% vacancy rate, which was far, far below the national benchmark. The reason why it had increased to 10% is because of the termination of the contract employees who had been interns in the department in the previous year. So there is always that fluctuation if you compare the third quarter and the last quarter, because you always have to terminate people that were appointed on contract. President, can I also say that I think it is a well-known fact that the migration of staff from IED and TVET colleges has had a very, very significant impact on the resources of the department and the ability of the administration component to actually provide support to the 39,000 employees that have moved to the department. That has slowed down our operations. For the first 3 months in this year, our focus has been on ensuring that we transfer the 39,000 employees. And I do not think that it is any demonstration of the inability of the department to manage this operation. There was also a question on the quality, no, on the inability to meet the 3 month target, you know, for each processes. Let me also say that, Chairperson, we would rather as a department release goods in terms of reference or specifications rather than, you know, advertising specifications that would put the department actually into disrepute when we have to appoint service providers. So we spend a lot of time in ensuring that the specifications are of good quality and are going to allow the, or to enable the department to appoint the best service providers out there. Because we said that one of the reasons is that we always have to send the specifications back to the program managers for improvement. In the terms of what are we doing about the non-availability of managers to sit in committees, we have inserted in the performance agreement a KRA that those who are, you know, appointed to sit in this committee will avail themselves as required. The three DDGs, the minister has given us a date of the 2nd of July for interviews for DDGs. The DDGs is that Chairperson, the post was advertised early this year. And I do want to say, I'm sure the leader of the delegation would also assist here. The minister has announced that we are going to create a new branch in the department for community education and training colleges. That then would require us to revisit the current branch which is set, as well as the type of the DDG, the profile of the DDG that we have to appoint both for VSET and for CEC. So there is that change that is happening, and I don't think we need to overlook that and simply proceed in appointing a DDG. We start, you know, looking at what kind of a DDG do we now need in view of these new developments. So I'm not saying that we are going to cancel the other, the post was advertised, but we may need to revisit or take a step back to say, don't we need now to redesign the job certification for the two DDGs? The impact of the ICT governance framework. Second thing, we do have a governance framework in place. However, it has to be reviewed so that we align it with the newly released framework that was released by the DPSA last year, October. So it's a matter of just ensuring that it is aligned with the DPSA framework. This includes the IT securities, the structure, the committees. We have them currently. However, we must align them to DPSA guidelines. I think I've addressed all the questions.
Okay, next. Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. The question was with regard to as to whether we are going to meet the targets we have set ourselves in the area of artisan development. And I must say, as I said earlier on, with regard to our unaudited annual report, which is already a subject of the Auditor General, the target we have set annually was 27,000. What we have achieved so far by the end of the financial year is 28,301. By implication thereof, that says to us we have overachieved by 1301. The target set by the NDP is 30,000 by 2030 annually that we must be producing artisans in the country. And I must say we are quite very happy, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that at least since financial year 2010-11, we have been on the ascendancy in terms of achieving the targets that we have set as the department for ourselves with regard to artisan development in the country. So therefore, we remain optimistic that we will be able to navigate ourselves through. And also, there is a question with regard to the non-achievements on both quarters, that is quarter 3 and quarter 4 of the artisans registered nationally in our system. And I want to say the delays were by six sisters. We could not provide us with the information at the time during those 2 quarters. Since then, we have received all the information. And I can report that by the end of the financial year, with regard to our unaudited annual targets, we have achieved as well that target. It means therefore mitigation measures that we put in place and delivered to us by or before the end of the financial year, that was at 1st March 2015. On the area of fluctuation on the levies, Acting DG Patel has answered that in affirmative. I can also report in saying, Honorable Chairperson, by February 2015, we had 541,961,000 companies that were registered for levies. Those that were below the threshold were 270,655. The difference between this was 271,306,000. So those are the companies that registered in terms of a levies in the country for all related sectors. But then obviously, as Acting DG Patel was saying, the fluctuation depends whether the company is still within that threshold of 510 over per annum. Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. So the next one is Dr.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Perhaps I could just start with this issue of UNISA and the admissions policy. In fact, if we look at the first time entry targets for UNISA for 2013, they had indicated to us that they would take in 54,810 students. In fact, they took in 33,828 students. That's 20,000 less than they had actually targeted. And that's why our overall figure has been depleted in that way. We expected to admit that because in 2012, the actual number of first-time entries was 52,227. What we discovered, though, was that previously they had a completely open-door policy. So even though they had entry requirements, they weren't applying the entry requirements. And this is what was also leading to the kind of problems that they were seeing in terms of their achievements. Now, if we look at this issue of success rate and throughput rate, I'd just like to clarify that. The success rate is the number of courses passed divided by the course enrollments across the system. So when the university system for contact and distance institutions, if we take across the average, had indicated it would be 74.5%. That's what they had indicated would be, which is fairly high if you think about the issue of distance education. In terms of the throughput rates, in order for us to understand a throughput rate, we have to look at cohort. We've got to say how many people entered in a particular year, and then we've got to track those students through the system, through their ID number, to understand how many of them dropped out or succeeded from that particular cohort. The department has been doing cohort studies, and in fact this year in our APP, you will notice kind of the 2015-16 year, we've committed to publishing the cohort studies from 2000 through to 2007. Why 2007, you may ask? The reason is, us actually think we need longitudinal data. So, for example, in the contact institutions, for a three-year course, we need at least 5 years' worth of data. But in the business institutions, for a three-year course, we need much longer than that. We need double, because they generally are part-time. And in fact, they will argue that we need more. So we would want at least 6 years, but what, say, UNISA argues is because of the nature of their students, we need 8 years. For a four-year course, we need 8 years at least for distance, or 10 years. So we need a longitudinal data in order to do it. And I thought it might be interesting, we've just finished the cohort studies and we're developing the report right now, but it might be interesting for the House to just understand this issue. If we take the 2007 cohort, that's the latest cohort that we got the full study for, after 3 years, now I'm taking this as the overall undergraduate for 3 and 4 year qualifications, but after 3 years, we had a 22.9% dropout in our contact students. So by 3 years, 22.9% had dropped out. After the 5th year, 27.2% had dropped out. And after the 7th year, 29.2% dropped out. In other words, around about 30% of the students going into the contact universities for 3 and 4 year qualifications had dropped out. That means a 70% throughput for our contact institution. If we look at the distance courses, it's the opposite. After the 3rd year, 59% had dropped out. After the fifth year, 66.2% had dropped out. And after the 7th year, 67.3% had dropped out. For the information where we've got 10 years of data, that's a 2005 cohort, we see by the end of 2 years, 73.8% had dropped out. In other words, around about 27% had succeeded. So there's a huge difference between the throughput in contact institutions and distance institutions. And this is the issue for us. We have to deal with the pedagogy and distance, and we need NEPA to really consider how we're going to deal with it. It's no use us creating open access without a reasonable chance of success. And that has to do with a number of different aspects. And that's, I think, why we disappointed in this number in first-time entries. We also do believe that it's probably the right thing, and we're going to have to go back to UNISA and readjust the targets so that we start getting a more realistic input into UNISA and we start dealing with this issue. But it's not just about the inputs for basic education, it's also about the pedagogy and distance education that has to be dealt with. And I'd like to indicate that one of the things we will be doing with some of the funding we're receiving from the European Union is to specifically look at this issue of open distance learning and the pedagogy related to that and how we can improve throughput rates if we wanted to use this as a measure to increase access in institutions. Just in terms of the next question then, the target number 5 is really about the proportion of students in science, engineering, psychology, business, and humanities. And it doesn't affect our ability to produce students in science, engineering, and technology, particularly because that has not decreased. In fact, the numbers have increased there. And also, in terms of our NDB targets, really it's also focused on the postgraduate, where we have been more successful than we thought we would be. I think the monitoring report that was mentioned by Professor Bozzoli on the scarce skills will be useful in that disaster regard. And we can obviously send all the monitoring reports. They all will finalize, and we'll make sure we send them all through to the portfolio committee. In terms of, and just maybe, I just want to also touch on this issue of the maths and science in basic education and the work that we've been doing on foundation-based teacher education. I think that it has been seen as one of the critical areas in the development of teachers is foundation-based. And that's why over the past 3 years we've focused so much on foundation-based teacher education and strengthening foundation-based teacher education. Some of the, you will be aware of the Strengthening Foundation-based Teacher Education program that we ran over the last 3 years, which has resulted in not only 21 universities being involved in producing foundation-based teachers, but there were a number of projects and programs that we specifically focused on maths and science development for foundation-based teachers. And in fact, there's some interesting reports from that, and if the committee is interested, we can send copies of some of those research projects. In terms of the length in higher education, I think that we do agree that it is a problem. I take the point that we need to maybe produce more women because of this other issue, the social issue. I think that is interesting and great, but we do have to think from a societal level of what it means when we don't develop our men. And given the issues that we have of violence against women and children, we need to deal with that. And it's something that we think is important to research in the system, and we are looking at how we might be able to make sense of this and how we might be able to bring men into the process more effectively. On the issue about the mentoring report, just coming back to this issue of the funding of higher education and whether or not we're going to see a problem in terms of the output of the system because of the funding issue. We are aware, and as you know, we have stressed that there is an issue around funding students, particularly poor students in higher education. And this issue of students not being able to come back when they are being successful is a problem, and we are trying to deal with that. I'm not too sure what effect that will have on the overall production in the system, because when institutions do their targeting and their projections, they are doing it within the context of understanding the funding within the system. And we get to see that, you know, this year was, I think, one of the first years where institutions really tried to stick within the funding. We may see some adjustments to the overall figures, but at the moment we're not able to see that. We will be keeping a close eye on it. I think that brings us to the end of the questions that were asked. Thank you.
Dr. Park, that's something through you, Chair. Universities, what field of study will the PhD? I want to remember.
Sorry, I'm at this one. it's across all fields. It's across all fields. I mean, we can give you that detail if it's required, but I haven't got it offhand.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just some of the questions that one perhaps need some elaboration as they have not been covered. Is there going to be a problem with delivering the campuses and TVET? Chairperson, the answer is yes. That's 40. We've just completed another round of PIT adjudication, and the thing doesn't seem rosy in terms of the number of companies that tendered and who meets the minimum requirements in regards to CIDB requirements and in regards to capacity to be able to deliver. So I must indicate that it's going to go through another advertisement process, but we will also have to really strategize in regards to these particular projects. I'm not sure if price is not the issue, but it's just capacity of the sector. Jefferson, in regards to that particular process, I must say that part of the problem is not so much the availability of executives, but also, as Ms. Mbobo indicated, is that the measurement of the target is from the date of submission of the specification. And often there's a lot of going back to the project managers to make sure that they fit the specification up. So we will have to relook at that particular issue. Both Honorable Mbasa and Bazalwe, thanks for appreciating some of the really big systemic issues that we are particularly faced with. And I want to indicate that we are looking at responsiveness of the curriculum, but also we're investing quite a bit in career development. Because part of the issue in terms of people doing qualifications that does not take them anywhere is because that may be the only access that they have into. And secondly, is a very intensive career development issue. Now, the last one. I'm sorry, I forgot when I stopped up. Your question with your permission.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I think most of the questions have been covered. I'll just touch on, I think there's just two that I need to cover. The question was that are we going to meet the targets that have been set? We have carefully considered the targets that have been set, and we have revised them already. I'd like to report based on all the limitations that I spoke to in my initial presentation, taking all of those into consideration. Now, for For 2015, so I just give an example of 2015, the target is 725,000, which would be unattainable because the actual enrollment for 2014 was 709,556. So if you look at that, and within the limited resources, limited infrastructure that I spoke about, that target is achievable. And of course, we carefully monitor the outer years as we progress. And the issue of the 1.2 million target and the target year has already been indicated. There was a question about what is the certification rate versus the pass rate. For your MVP program, certification means that the student must pass 7 out of the 7 subjects because they will enroll for 7 subjects. And for your report 919, they enroll for 4 subjects, so they need to pass 4 out of 4 subjects for them to be certified. Now the question arises because I think it also comes from the fact that the subject pass rates are higher. What happened within those 7 subjects, for example of the SEV, you get a vocational program subject and then you get your fundamental subjects. And also fundamentals, also vocational program subjects, the performance is extremely good. As I indicated, it's averaging around 80% in terms of the student performance in those subjects. It has not always been that high, and this is all an indication of the interventions that have been put in place over the years. And of course, as the curriculum matures over the years and the lecturers are gaining confidence and better knowledge and becoming more confident, it becomes evident. And the concerted efforts of the department to link studying with the workplace, we see the results of the students who go into the college and also are able to spend a bit of time in the workplace. You see how that performance improves in terms of the vocational subjects. And again, the challenge then still remains in the mathematics, and I think our SDG has spoken at length as well as Dr. Parker in relation to that. The other question was in relation to the action plan that was presented in the previous financial years and how whether that has been implemented or not. Honourable Chairperson, I would like to report that indeed that has been implemented, and hence we see, although the performance is not where we would like to see, we must remember that the performance comes from a single-digit performance in terms of the certification rate in the previous years, if I may cite 2007, 2008 for an example. And those action plans, which include, for example, student attendance policies that have been put in place, lecturer development interventions that have been put in place, and for the first time in the history of colleges, we granted the lecturer qualifications, which was granted recently, and currently universities are developing programs. We need to understand and appreciate that sometimes, particularly the development of programs by universities, do not move at a speed at which we would desire, but certainly there's something that is happening in that regard, and we will see in the coming years how that progresses. We have also, I need to indicate, a policy on foundation programs, because whilst we say, yes, some of them would come from the lower grades with the challenges of mathematics, we can't then disregard those that are already in our institutions. Honourable Chairperson, there have been foundation programs developed so that those coming in, particularly showing weaknesses in these subjects that have indicated that they are supported. The Minister has also put in place a task team on the funding norms to see how even those foundation programs can be assisted with funding if necessary. So those are some of the things that we're looking at. In addition, in relation to the limitation of lecturers, on the departmental website, the department has a database requesting for nominations of qualified unemployed lecturers that could be reabsorbed where possible into the sector where they could assist, particularly with those colleges that are indicating that their limitation in terms of improving on their performance is on the availability of qualified lecturers. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I think I've covered the remaining in relation to TVET colleges.
Honourable Member, we have just received responses to all the issues that you raised. I will now allow you to follow up questions. Honourable Member Kassim, Honourable Member Zela, and Honourable Member Kibia.
So I want to just do a question to the EDG University Education. First up, since the function now falls under that function, with regards to the student-centered financial aid model, just to pique my interest, there was previously plans on the rollout of it. I just want to know exactly where we, there were a lot of issues with the system as well. If we can get some more information as to what are the plans of that public entity in particular moving forward in the rollout, and what has been the success of the pilot that has been run at the various institutions. Just moving to the VZ branch, Chairperson, I've had a number of questions in this branch, but the first, before I go to the VZ branch, my first question will go to the ACDG to say that in the 2014 VRRR, this committee recommended that the Minister should ensure that the senior management of the branch is held accountable for poor performance in meeting targets set for the stipulated period. So I want to know, because clearly the targets have not been met by and large in this particular branch, and this was the recommendation of the committee, whether or not the department has considered implementing this recommendation. If not, why not? Then to the VZ branch in particular, I want to start off with the NASFAS first rules and guidelines. Just said that many colleges don't administer according to the guidelines and that there were interventions that were being put in place. If college is not going to administer the guidelines, what is the authority of the guidelines? What is the department sets the guidelines? Okay? So exactly what happens if a college decides, well, we want to do it some other way because it's the guideline? Is there any particular authority that's attached to it? But more than that is I want to know the effect of the guideline on the students that are in that particular bursary. Because, for example, as I've mentioned, one of them is that students must attend 80% or within that they must attend 80% of their classes to move forward. Yet, because of the guidelines, students that within 10 kilometers don't get a transport allowance, for example, and have trouble getting to and from their college campus. But more than that, just in terms of the implementation of the bursary stuff, what effect does that have on school passing their models of being able to proceed? Because I know until now, and was raised previously, there are students that have still not received any transport allowance. And I can tell you, there are students even for accommodation allowance, those that stay more than 40 kilometers away, they only last year in a lot of these colleges received it at the end of the year. And the same thing that's going to happen this year by the looks of things. Therefore, are we not setting up our students to fail in that regard? And are we not really setting up our certification rates to not be where they need to be? Because as much as there's money that's been invested, we're setting those students to fail. I just want to move back one step, Chairperson, to university education, because understand that perhaps the targets are set within the funding environment that we have. What I want to know is, does the department have figures that show how many of your financially needy students of the cohort in your headcount enrollments, I suppose it would use those that have been funded or have applied for funding there as an indicator of getting that type of information, are actually going to get into the system. The reason why I'm asking this question is what I don't want is, what I don't think any of us want to see, is that this particular post-school environment of university education is something that is reserved for those that can afford in our privilege. So we can meet all the targets that we want based on people that can afford and can afford to pay for themselves, because there is limited space in any case. My question really is, there can be many that can't afford that are so academically deserving, yet there are places that are being taken up by those that can afford because there's insufficient funds for them. So I just want to know, is there information around that and the progression that's being made in terms of the number of people that can't afford that can enter the system, or those that are being kept out of the system? Also, is there a reason why there isn't a first-time enrollment figure in the VZ branch, is a headcount enrollment figure? Is there a figure of how many new students are entering in the beginning of the year? So is it just that figure that says these are the total number that are currently enrolled in the system at a particular time, and we see that that target is decreasing for next year. For now, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, based on the responses that we just received, and I understand that there are problems with regard to the delivery of the 12 colleges that are supposed to be built. Yesterday, when the President addressed the youth, he said again that education is the airport's priority. And to that effect, he also indicated that he announced the building of these 12 new colleges. Given the situation in the department, the movement back and forth of this bid certification and so on, what is going to happen? Is the President, are we going to see the completion of these 12 colleges within the current term of the President, or is the President going to leave office without seeing these colleges becoming a reality? That's the question. The second one I would like to know, Mr. Patel reminded us that, well, of course, some targets have not been met, but we still have 4 more years for some of the targets to be met. Are you by any means suggesting that we should wait for the next 4 years before we start seeing you meeting all your targets? Thank you.
Thank you. I was listening to the responses, and I also want to thank the department for that. Obviously, the department is situated between stretching itself to meet the target, to push themselves forward, and on the other hand, an imminent risk that they may not achieve the job. So we have an understanding that sometimes they don't want to exaggerate or try to overachieve because it may then lead to failure, and we understand that. Chairperson, I just want to come back to the issue of the gender balance, and I was wondering if the program 3, the DDG for university education, and maybe the same applies to TVET colleges, do we have any indication that certain subjects actually attract more females than others? So in other words, it would sit pretty much along the lines of subjects on offer, because at some of the international universities, etc., for instance, in England, that is certainly the case. So is it the same here? And is there a similar trend towards a great enrollment of females into veterinary science? Because that was also one of the international threats. So just a better understanding of that. So if we want to identify sort of a society impactor, do we also consider the subject on offer? And does the same phenomenon, does it also rear its head in the college sector? Or do we simply just not have enough information about that? Chairperson, secondly, I just wanted to have a better understanding. On program 4, and it is target for certification rates for bursary recipients enrolled in the report 190 and 191, and NCV qualifications in the academic year. I just wanted to have a better understanding. I know there was a comment made that colleges were not adhering to the policy or enrollment policies, etc. And I made a note here in relation to the financial need to be linked to academic performance. Now that sort of links onto what Honorable Kasim has said. Just want to have a better understanding. What does the policy say? So how do we we attract and make sure that there is a career path and education path for people who come from very impoverished backgrounds, so that they are not excluded from the system. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I will now call upon the department to respond to the follow-up question.
Thank you so much, Chair. I'll firstly get the program manager and then I'll round up on that particular one. Can we start with the first
chair? Thank you, Sukha. Perhaps I can just start with the question asked on a student-centered financial aid model. As you are aware, the FAS is currently implementing that in pilot institutions. In the original view, they had thought they would start rolling it out in 2015. But it was clear by about halfway through the 2014 academic year that they were not going to be able to extend that to new institutions. That what had to happen before we extended to new institutions was that all the issues that were highlighted in the pilot were dealt with, and that the systems were developed fully, and that all of those issues could be answered before it was rolled out further into the rest of the system. And so that is happening now. They're continuing with the rollout in the pilot institutions. They're dealing with all of those issues that have been highlighted through the pilot, which I think is the right thing to do. And the board will make a determination sometime during this year. We hope within the next month or so as to whether or not they're going to look at extending the rollout to new institutions next year or not. But they haven't yet come back with a determination. Just to indicate that the department is meeting with the NSFAS on a quarterly basis in order to get updates and to try to monitor exactly what is happening with the institution, and so we are expecting to have that, in fact, the next quarterly meeting, I think, is next week, and we should get an indication then as to exactly where they are in relation to the rollout of the pilot. We do believe that they can deal with all the glitches and the issues. It is a very important advancement to the NSFAS to get this thing on board. In terms of the issue of the gender balance, I think there are two things in relation to that. One is we are currently in the process of doing the cohort study. Now, we've got all the cohort information for the contact and the distance, and we've distinguished between four-year and three-year degrees and so on, and diplomas. But what we've realized is we need to do this work. We need to look at the gender issues in relation to specific specializations. And so that work is being carried out at the moment and will be part of that report, which we have targeted to publish by the end of this financial year. We've specifically highlighted the MDCHB, the medical qualifications, to understand that one, the physical sciences and the life sciences, teacher education, because we know it's very much female bias, but we need to understand to what extent at different levels and so on, the animal health. And I can't remember that one, but we made a list of six that we thought were important to follow up. We clearly couldn't do every single one in the system because it's too big, but that is coming as we go through. Then linked to the cohort study being done, and it comes back to the issue of the stress. What we are currently doing together with National Treasury is a study on the NSFAS throughput rates, trying to understand the students who have been supported by NSFAS. And we're going to draw that information into our cohort study that will be published as well. So we really understand the students that have been supported through NSFAS, how are they doing, what are the issues in terms of underfunding, perhaps where there's off-slicing, those kinds of things, we can identify them. In terms of being able to really tell just generally how many poor students don't come into higher education, that's a little bit more difficult, but it is linked to the research that we're doing and linked to our NSFAS policy dialogue in the system. How do we understand what the quantum of poor students coming out of basic education ought to be coming to higher education, what's happening to them, how do we understand that, and how do we find ways of being able to support them through funding going forward. And as you know, we're working hard on trying to just get
additional funding to support those students. But that's where we are. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, just a direct question to reset, and then I will come into questions post.
Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The question in related to, let me just get my place here on the follow-up questions. There was a question to on the guidelines to check whether they have an authority. Certainly, these guidelines have authority. They are communicated to the colleges with a clear indication that there should be no deviation in this regard. And we do hold principals accountable in relation to that, particularly where we do see deviation. I need to indicate that the guidelines are also very clear in terms of, certainly there is a bias towards giving priority to tuition. That is not as the exclusion of allowance and taking into consideration that some students do need those allowances for either travel and accommodation. And honourable member, there are challenges at all levels, at various levels, even at the level of the administration through NFAS, up to the level of the students, because we must not create a false impression that all our students are honest. There are some of them that are completely dishonest, that will even go to the point of presenting fraudulent documents just to ensure that they do get the money, particularly the money that doesn't go into their pockets. The money related to tuition is easier to control because it must be paid directly to the institution and program costs are clear. But the money related to allowances where you get exercise being involved, where you get accommodation, and you find that the level of creativity you get from the student is beyond our own comprehension. And some of the delays are as a result of that, but not only as a result of that. And some of the stringent measures which have been put into the guideline documents were on the basis of audits that were done previously to find that, you know, to try and close some of the loopholes that students have created. Unfortunately, sometimes this does disadvantage those students that are being honest. But it's always a moving target. You try and close this gap and tomorrow the student has found another creative way of opening up another gap. The delays in payment, certainly they will affect issues related to what you've indicated, like attendance and so forth, because the students do need the money. I need to indicate that at the beginning of each academic year, the department does give up, through NFAS, does give an upfront payment to all colleges to ensure that at least some of the emergencies and urgent issues that students have to deal with are taken into consideration. And that is prior to colleges even submitting any documentation in relation to the bursary application. Of course, because we have compliance issues, they have to submit those at a later stage. But it's to ensure that certain emergencies that have to be dealt with can be attended to. Because this is a different meeting, I think NFAS is also aware of the challenges. There are also challenges at the level of colleges as well, but this is something that is continuously being worked on in relation to dealing with the challenges, particularly in relation to paying of the allowances that will affect the student attendance in the colleges. The issue about the enrollment figures, yes, we do have first-time enrollment figures, and we can make those available. I do not have them with me at the moment, but we also present them the year before in terms of spaces available for new entrants in the next year. And so we present those figures the year preceding the next academic year, and we also make them available at the beginning of that year. We do have those on record. Honourable Kenyon asked the question to say exactly what does it say in relation to the guidelines. The guidelines are saying that we understand the financial need, but you cannot divorce that from academic potential or academic performance. But it is on a sliding scale, because you can't create a situation where you say you're only going to award bursaries to your A students, particularly for those who are coming in, because they're coming in with a grade 9. And many of them are coming from various schools with they're not standardized examinations at that level of grade 9. I know that education is progressively working towards that. So it is a sliding scale, prioritizing financial need, but linking that to either academic performance or academic potential. Because as you are aware, we have to report here, you can't just have the money going out without indicating
the value in the investment. And I want to close up by saying we have noted, Honorable Killian, the recommendation you've made about the report on a quarterly basis. I think it's a valid and sound recommendation, and we'll make sure that we do report that accordingly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. In regards to the visit issues, can I just say, you know, we touched wood that of the 38,000 people coming onto our payroll, so we were hoping that we would not have sleepless nights in April and May. Unfortunately, touching wood, we were able to successfully move the payrolls with minimal problems. If there were problems, we would have been affected here at the portfolio committee issue. So I think with that, really our administration section, our human resource development, finance sessions are really really take some help. And part of the problem about this process, Chairperson, it had to be a reprioritization. Noting that we had come here to the portfolio committee reporting that we did not have money, that we were using our own particular budget. So people have been working full-time, especially in the last quarter of the previous financial year, to be able to ensure that we get this, and that really is an achievement. However, certain things have from by the wayside, as members have rightly indicated. Now, our next step really is to consolidate, reset, and taking the community education and training process forward. But on the Kasim asked a question around the 2014 BRRR and what are the consequential management, what's the consequential consequences for managers that are not able to fulfill their programs. Jefferson, there has been, and both the minister and the DG, obviously those letters are not public, in terms of the letters of reprimand, etc., that we also receive. In fact, part of the challenge is sometimes we do have colleagues that do not go through the whole particular process. And obviously we do have people taking parts for it, etc., officials. So they escape the net. So, we'll have to find a way in which how we can deal with this particular issue. Please be assured that very strong action is taken. The minister has, in the last audit process, given us, we have to sign a commitment with the DG in regards to ensuring. So that is the consequential management. In regards to the infrastructure, I want to indicate and just set our cards right. We had 12 campuses. Six we said we would deliver by December 2015, three of which construction is underway, and we're going to be delivering by December 2015. I'm also indicating, I don't know if I have the right to invite to you, Chairperson, but I want to announce that on the 20th of June, that's in 2 days' time, the Minister is going to open one of the campuses in the Kabazimbi Lautaro municipality at the Rakhokhile Sports Ground. Now, how do we accompany the other three? Those are the other three that we have to, that are being awarded. The issue about those three is that the time frame. We're going to be pushing for the president to see who's got that, but those are the ones that may overrun. The other six we're delivering in the 31st December 2019. So those are the ones that we got into problems with in terms of. So we still have time. So 12, 6 by December 2015, three of them are already under construction. One of the three will be delivered on the 20th. The least three outstanding. Of the three, we are awarded the contract, and so construction will start soon. All the processes that we had in terms of sufficient qualifying bidders, that is in regards to the six that have to be delivered in December 2019. I don't know if the CFO wants to clarify, but... Okay.
Maybe the CFO should talk to the turnaround time for filling up the figures, because I hear What is the turnaround time between one to the college?
Chair, I'm not a building contractor, but the big problem is that the issue around appointing contractors was the main reason for postponing the due date for six of the sites. We went out on a tender after the first round to appoint the nine. Of that, we are very clear at this point in time that we will not be able to appoint contractors for all nine sites, and therefore we will have to go out on a further round of tenders. We are looking at possible ways of dealing with that to save some time, and if it so be, we would bring the completion date forward. But to be safe at this point in time, based on the circumstances and the processes involved, we have for the interim set 2019, but we do plan to bring those dates forward as soon as we have finalized the appointment of new contractors. And it must also agree with the contractors the date of delivery. So it is a bit of an unforeseen situation at this point.
I know you're explaining, but looking at the distribution and then from what you can get in budget. Am I right? Yes. Infrastructure, branch. So there is a budget discussion. Now, many of the summit will not be actually happening. So this is the discussion that we have, which means we're going to find a way of
guidelines that you publish, because I hear that they have authority, but they're not being administered accordingly. So I hear, so there's different things. The general statement that's been made, interventions will be made, you know, dealing with it with principles and so forth. I just want to hear something specific here, because we can't keep having this thing. And I tell you, it comes from my own experiences of going to TED colleges, where campus principals and college principals are not doing what they are supposed to do. And only when they see someone coming there to check on what's going on. So for example, at a specific TVET college, they're busy charging students upfront payments who are NASFAS beneficiaries. Then they are not supposed to be doing that. And I know that they've done that. For other places, they're charging students registration fees for residences that the student never get into. 2,500 and some students had paid. And they'll never get that money back in there, so later on it was for something else, which makes absolutely no sense. And then they don't give any allowances. But when someone comes there to inquire why not, you find the negative students have already signed loan agreements for those, or sorry, agreements for those allowances. But it wouldn't have happened if someone wasn't there previously. So what are the consequences for not adhering to those? If we say that these have authority, they are compulsory, they have obligatory guidelines, it's not something you can elect to do if you want to do it that way. What are the consequences for the colleges if they are not doing it accordingly, and so forth? And what is the department actually doing to monitor that, or the public entity, if it's public entity's job to do that, together with the department, to monitor that those are being done at all of our colleges across the country?
Okay.
irrespective of whether some students are dishonest or not, that's not the point that I'm making. The point that I'm making is that if there is guidelines, they must be implemented according to the guidelines, and anyone that is outside of that is obviously an intervention.
Some of the guidelines we have, and we're only having actually deviation, and where the deviation, what is the Professor Pozzoli and
just to get back to the TVET colleges and the tenders that aren't being issued, is there some obscure requirement that these construction companies have to fulfill that they're not fulfilling? In other words, do they have to, you know, have 49% people from the local area or something that's making it so difficult for you to find proper people to build these colleges? Because if that's the case, you maybe have to change your rules. And maybe in some of these very remote areas, there are not building companies that are going to be able to build something as sophisticated as a TVET college. So are you being strung up by your own rules? And if so, what is the flexibility? Thank you.
Yes, Professor. I have responded to one of my questions. The other one is not responded to. You only responded on the one of the TVET colleges. The other one, when I wanted to know, are we going to wait for 4 years, because you reminded us of that, before we see them fulfilling their own targets?
Chair, with your permission, if I could just stop this one. The professions that are historically female dominated, nursing is one that I can think of, and social work. How do we change that? Because I don't know if it is not intentionally done, because if you look at nursing, I think all the recruiters, matrons, people who do recruitment, the ed personnel are female themselves. Do you put a quota there, or I just want to hear if they have to change. The last one, I know we're dealing with universities, but on TVET also, artisans, the tradition that electrician, mechanic, builders, carpenters are men, how do you think we could change that and make it after more women? Because with the technical equipped tools that are available, they can also fail to other artisan occupations. So.
Okay, thank you for your question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Look, only in its fashion guidelines, etc., Chairperson, if you indulge us, we actually don't have the technical people here to be able to fully answer that particular question. I just consulted with Ms. Kuchana. She's filling in for the acting DVG, so we don't have the details. But we're committed to ensure both the NFS processes, as well as our own particular processes, to ensure that those practices that are particularly taking place are avoided. And if you have any specific information, we shall undertake to investigate them. But there is a problem, and we are unable to give you details in regards to that for now. The CFO will answer the question on the tender requirements and the rules. In regards to the question within 4 years, according to our plan, yes, we will be able to deal with the 12 that we promised. The 6 by 2018-19 should start construction so that we finish within the 4 years. So those 12 that have been promised will be fulfilled within this period.
Okay, just to add to the issue around the appointment of construction companies, there are not any regional specific kinds of requirements in the tenders that were issued. They were all national tenders, so we did not do it as per a region or with a specific requirements in terms of certain percentage of the workers must be from the local area or issues like that. The problem is that for all building contractors, there are specific CIBB grading requirements. And we place it on a certain level to ensure that you can have good quality contractors. And with most of the bids, the problem was that it did not meet those requirements. In addition, the department went and looked at specific areas within each company. We did exercises where we looked at their capacity. We went and looked at their financial statements. We looked at the current projects that they are performing. And on those basis, there were also some disqualified because of what we've determined at that stage. So the next step that we are considering is to, based on those that tendered and based on those that did fall out through the due diligence processes, that we may enter into possible negotiations to do one site or a site that they could perhaps meet the requirements. Secondly, there are also some of the bigger companies that did qualify, where we would like to go and negotiate and see if they can't pick up the second site perhaps. So those are processes that's currently ongoing. Thank you.
Thanks, Sir Bessie. I wanted just to get into this one of accidents. I must say that in our assessment, the trades that are really seemingly in demand in the country is electrician, fitter and turner, welder, motor mechanic, boiler making, diesel mechanic, F bricklayer, millwright and panel fitter. Those are just top 10. They seem to be drawing a lot of interest to young persons out there. And I must say, on the area of interest, especially by women, we are seeing now interest to an extent, but then I must say, dominated so is still males who are dominating these areas. But then of course the Deputy Minister has been leading this advocacy campaign that we have launched recently, a decade of artisan. Previously we've had what we called a year of artisan, that was 2013. And then of course, taking from those lessons of 2013, the department agreed that we must have a decade of artisan in the Ministry of Advocacy, 2014 and 2024. I can say I do not have exact figures, Honorable Chairperson, but then we do have a breakdown in terms of agenda as well as provinces, those figures of young persons participating in the thanks very much.
Well, these are the... Maybe respond to the last question from Honourable Connor in relation to the profession that are female dominated. I think this is one of those issues. We have to look at the overall enrollments in terms of males and females as one indicator, and another indicator must be to look at individual professions. But we also have to understand the social issues that result in those being dominated in that way or not. But the one example, and why we're looking at the teacher education throughput, is because since 2007, with the Funza Lushaka bridge coming online and all the work that's been done in expanding teacher education, we have seen more males coming into higher education. We want to really understand what the impact of that has been. Part of it has been around the communication of teaching as a career and so on, to see whether or not it's some way in which impacts can be made on changing views of people. But we certainly need to look across the board at these various professions going forward, and it's going to be research that helps us understand that better and deal with it, and to identify where it is a problem and where it isn't. Thank you.
Firstly, I just want to indicate that I haven't seen that letter of the DG, and I was trying to sort out whether I am acting. I don't have any formal indication thereof. So for the record, well, I mean, does it say acting or will it say it? Does it say acting or does it say leading the delegation?
That says leading the delegation.
Yes.
Okay, I then spoke about prophets when I said acting.
Okay. All right. No, okay, so at least let's clarify that, Chairperson. Firstly, let me just say thank you very much, Chairperson, and to this committee for giving us this reception where there has been some deep comments as well as deep questions. We'll be taking back a lot of these things and reflecting on it. And I think that's an important part is every time you come, you learn and you want to improve. So thank you very, very much for those words and also the words of encouragement, appreciating the challenges that we particularly face. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. All right. But let us also thank you for the presentation by the Chief Program Manager. From where I'm sitting, it's clear that they know what they are expected to do. The only issue is where they have not met their target, 100% target, where they have not performed well. Do you understand?
Sorry that I missed the opportunity, because in the response it was said that they don't have the technical knowledge here to respond to my question on the proposed guidelines. If there could be a committee chairperson, that those responses can be made in writing to the committee after this meeting, I'm sure the committee will be there.
No, Chairperson, we surely will do that. Yes, we did say we don't have sufficient information present here in regards to the guidelines and the consequence of management. We will submit the report to the Secretary that they have
relied. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, then. Okay. Let's move on to the other thing. I really would like to thank you for your presentation and on your non-financial performance. Our observations are that you have certain targets that you have achieved and a certain target where you have exceeded. We would like to commend you on this. But where you have not achieved the target, we would like to encourage you to be more realistic when you set yourself targets. I'm sure we think this for the second time now. But we did say that in the year, I'm sure it's the beginning of the financial year. When we engaged with you sometime last year. Set yourself realistic targets, and also, I think what came from the engagement was a concern also on where you have not set yourself targets on the set goal. I'm sure we're still better to understand why. What happens eventually in the quarter if you don't have targets? And the observations made by the CPN were correct, that where you set your subtitles, you have achieved. So I think it is a standard practice. So we will be happy to have it set for all the quarter and then achieve much more than we have done in the two quarters. Well, in our engagement, let me also say that their observations about the department has done well in their financial time, that's the basis of a letter. You've already made yourself a letter before. But now we want this new letter, it's for the cabinet. That of rising to the true body, which is 12. Then we will give it as a when we have our engagement agreed that annual targets need to be broken down into quarterly targets in order to provide timely intervention to address challenges and things. Of course, it's noted with concern that the department is expecting further delays in the construction of the new TV due to companies that are not using the new money. I'm not going to go to the problem, because I know once you have issued out the certificate, it's not okay. So it feels like a new year. You also indicated a challenge with regards to development of certification. Yes? And the lady next to you even said, we're considering to train our staff members on how to develop certification. actually mean that with that 40, having explained what is the percentage of humidity 40. You can't sit down with a 40,000 and end up with a 40,000, that doesn't matter here. Immediately you take all those, some people find that they're working maybe say the cleaners, they also apply because they want to, the threshold. So you take out all those with great speed and then that certification and then, so please help us in this one. I'm sure you will see this into the group and in the next meeting, after all in the next meeting we will be discussing what that is, so I'm sure you will find that you are on there. And then, of course, in our discussion, there were proposals made for submissions of copies of compiled reports that are reflected in the law and contract report. And where it comes to men becoming endangered species in the full education and training, the meeting resolved that we need to have an innovative strategy. On the qualified lecturers, I know the lady in her presentation said they're looking around to find qualified lecturers that can be upgraded. As long as you are the chief, you still follow the procedure. Because if they, in terms of financing, there is a procedure. You don't just call them up because that will push the department into a institute for not following the procedure. Of course, the committee also asked for figures of students that are financially needy, which I think Dr. Parker promised to try and get a good calculation to answer that question. Understand the magnitude of the problem. And also we will not only want to understand the magnitude of the problem, but we also want your intervention strategy in this area of it. We are encouraged by the quarterly meetings between the department and NESPA to find solutions on NESPA challenges, and we are looking forward to a very good day. Because we are seeing, I think this is with 8 cases. When we welcome the commitment by the department to investigate further the causes of low enrollment of males, and then the university branch to forward to the committee all those things that are already updated to. And but thank you so much for engagement. It was fruitful as I have indicated. There is some way we have achieved, but where we have achieved, I think it will be a progressive move to come up with an improvement and achieve. All about that effect, 100% achievement. Remember those are the goals of money. If you don't need that money, you do. And if you have a way where you would have found a saving, I don't know how practical this is to do, where there's a saving. So quickly redirect the saving to my part. Quickly before it becomes a viable. You can try to be innovative. Okay. But thank you very much. Shall we then move on to the presentation? To our next presentation, which is a presentation on development of the additional STEM for the school education and training.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Dr. Parker, this is preparing the slides. Dr. Parker will lead us on this.
thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to do a fairly quick presentation on the development of the National Plan for high school education and training. I'm going to start with a little bit of an overview into the White Paper for Postal Education and Training, just in terms of background and the ongoing implementation, and then look at the process around the development of the National Plan and the time frame, specifically in relation to the Minister's indication that it will be ready by March 2017. Firstly, the White Paper for Postschool Education and Training, Building an Expanded, Effective and Integrated Postschool System, was published in November 2013 and then launched at the beginning of 2014. It sets out principles, vision and policy frameworks for consolidated, integrated, well-articulated, differentiated and coherent postschool education and training systems. And our principles are what we really desire from our system. It focuses on the expansion of postschool education training, on improving quality and building partnerships, especially linking formal education, workplace-based training and the labour market, so that we can ensure that our graduates from the various parts of the TESIS system are enjoyable. It's not the only thing, but it is highlighted. It introduces the Community Education and Training College, which up to that point had not been mentioned before. The White Paper identified three specific subsystems for post-school education and training then. That is the higher education system, mostly made up by universities, but also including a private higher education institution. The second, the technical and vocational education training institution, together with the public and the private FET colleges. Community education and training. These subsystems are complemented and supported by or dependent on a range of other key role players. We look at the quality assurance system, SAQA, that's in qualification for quality, the Council on Higher Education, the Quality Committee, the Trades and Organization, or MALUSI, and that entire system which supports post-school education and training. It's also the SAP, which provides the financial aid, and the Lead Grant system, made up of the National Skills Fund and the CETUS. And there are now a range of institutions and bodies that support these three subsystems. And here we've got the FASEC, the National Artisan Moderating Body, NAM. We've got the CDS, the Career Development Service, the CAS, which is the Central Application Service, the National Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences, the National Research Foundation and various science councils, the HRDSA process, the various professional bodies out there. So all of these different institutions in different ways support the post-school system. And the White Paper mentions all of these in different aspects in terms of trying to identify the roles. Now, since the White Paper was published, all the various units within the department are working at implementing it. For example, community education and training colleges are in the process of being established right now. So while the plan hasn't yet been produced, work is being done in terms of what has been identified in the White Paper. I'll just mention some of these. There are many, many other things that are happening. The TVET system has been strengthened and expanded. Higher Education Act has been reviewed. The Staff and South African Universities Framework has been approved and is currently being implemented. The Skills Development Act is under review. The Career Development Services has been set up and is currently operating within the department. The Central Application Service is currently being developed and is a project that is working on that. And there are many, many more activities that are going on, all focused on implementing what is in the White Paper. However, it's recognized that what we really need to do is to have an overall plan in order to ensure that we can have coordinated implementation of the White Paper, that we get coherence and alignment of all the processes to ensure we minimize contradictions. It's recognized that if we all implement different things, there's a danger there that we might not ensure that these are properly aligned, even though we are trying to work in that way within the department.
We also need to check for operation, collaboration, effectiveness, efficiency, differentiation, and sustainable growth. And we're not going to do that unless we have coherency in a single plan. We need to identify the funding required for system targets and the goals that are aligned with the National Development Plan and other government commitments. You know, these commitments in the National Development Plan are there, but we also have commitments that made, for example, by the Department of Health in terms of the health expansion. We've got the issue of the PRCC and the infrastructure development across the system and the need for providing the capacity for implementing the system. The clarification of overall architecture of the system, its structures and roles and responsibilities and expectations of these various institutions and organizations that are acting at different levels in the system. We recognize unless these are clearly spelled out, there is a danger of some overlap, and for that reason, this plan becomes an important plan to develop. So what are we looking at? We're looking at developing a comprehensive national plan for the post-school education and training system, covering the period up to 2030. That includes a master systems plan, integrating the three subsystem plans, one for higher education, one for TVET, and one for community education. And in relation to this, the issues linked to all these various supporting aspects need to be integrated across. So we will have a sort of master systems plan, but it will be comprised of three specific sub-plans. While we understand integration is a very important aspect, we also understand we need to be focusing on each system, because if we, you know, we've got to understand the boundary conditions between these systems and then look at what are the integrating factors, which we do see as things such as the quality assurance system, the funding system, and so on. Part of the output is an easily accessible, frequently asked questions booklet. So the team that is doing this is going to need to develop a booklet, because we will produce a plan, but we also need something like this that will be utilized to inform the system in a way that's going to be easily digestible. The development process, we're obviously in the process of this at the moment, but just to indicate what we are doing, we're appointing a multidisciplinary team to assist in developing this national plan. There's appointment of the project management team, which includes the overall manager as chief director level, a writer at director level, and an administrative assistant director level. And these are technical full-time expertise that we are appointing to ensure that we produce the plan. We've already identified the people there, and they're in the process of being appointed. The five task teams that are going to be set up, there's one on higher education and training, one on technical vocational education and training, one on community education and training, one that's going to be cost-cutting, that focuses on integration or system binding elements, and this includes quality assurance, the features, the organizational structure of the department, and so on. There's a list of issues that we have to be thinking about there. And then the third one, the fifth one, is the second cost-cutting team, which is going to be focused specifically on funding. How do we understand the funding requirements for implementation of the national plan over the period? And that's funding both from the circuit and from the lead grant system. In terms of our governance and management of the plan, obviously, the minister is overall responsible for the process, and this planogram just tries to indicate how we are dealing with this. We've set up a national steering committee for the plan, and that steering committee is chaired by the DG. It comprises of the DDGs, selected officials from each of the core programs, the VSET, the higher education, that's university education, and from skills, and also includes the minister's special advisor. That team, that steering committee will be meeting on a quarterly basis. If we look at the DHET coordinating team,
This is a smaller coordinating team that's connected to the project management team. It is going to be within my branch, so I will be a part of that, and then we will also have individuals from various key core branches on that team as well. And what that team will do is it will ensure the relationship between the steering committee and the tasking oversight group. It will also be the face that interacts with external stakeholders, reference groups, to ensure that we have consultation all the way along. In terms of the task group, the tasking oversight group, that group will be directly managing the work of the various task teams that have been set up to deal with these different aspects. So this slide just summarizes that, what the steering committee is, and specifically to indicate that it will be meeting quarterly, it will report to the minister and provide feedback to the task team. So that on an ongoing basis, we'll have this information flow to ensure that we develop a plan that is coherent. In terms of coordination team, it will include the three-person project management team and identified officials from each branch. It will be the engine room for development of the plan, and it will work full-time on the project. As I indicated, the project management team are full-time resources. It supports the work of all task teams and the steering committee. It engages and consults with external bodies through reference groups on a regular basis through the development of the national plan. And then the task team oversight group, which includes the chairperson who will be designated by the director general, the chairperson of each of the task teams and the coordination unit, and will meet once a fortnight to ensure progress and integration of the work. So you'll see what we're trying to do here in the development of the plan is have a sort of tiered process. Task teams working, fortnightly meetings of the task team oversight group, monthly meetings, quarterly meetings of the steering committee, and the focus of the coordination team ensuring that we ensure communication flow in all directions. The actual time frames and actions. So if you look at this, we started this process already last year. The internal design of the process, that including the analysis of the white paper, the collation of documents, the development of terms of references and ministerial approval took place between June 2014 and January 2015. So that work is already done. We then also advertised for expressions of interest to various parties, whoever has had an interest in being involved in this, and we've collected databases of individuals and of companies and of consultants who may be brought into this process. So that's already been done as well. We've identified the project team manager and in the process of contracting their services, but they were identified already. This was not an easy thing to do, but we have done that. The development of a business plan to secure the funding and funding approval. You know, obviously this is an important aspect of it. And we have identified, the minister just identified funding that the National Skills Fund would assist us with, but we have to still do this business plan, and that is now being finalized, and we're in the process of getting this in place. The project management team appointed, that will be finalized. At the moment, but from July, it will be in place. And we will be working and starting full-time on the process from the beginning of July. The steering committee, TOR, approved, and the steering committee appointed, so that's in the process at the moment, it's with the DG, and so we should be finalizing that within the next week or so. The various task teams appointed, that is the first job of the project management team. So they will be specifically going through the process of identifying who needs to be on those various top teams and ensuring that we get those TRRs in place and that the submissions go to the DG for approval and we get these top teams appointed within July. The draft, then in terms of the process going forward, obviously the teams will be working, the process will be implemented, and we're looking at having developed the draft plan by sort of
between July 2015 and July 2016, we're giving a year to this process. It is an important process that requires that amount of time. This will include online consultation with various reference groups, but that will have to be published for public comments. So we're looking at being published for public comments. You'll then be getting in the analysis of comments, and there'll be a further consultation process, including obtaining advice from the Council on Higher Education, which is required in just the Higher Education Act. And that will take place between August and November 2016. We're looking at a final cabinet memo and ministerial approval to be ready for the minister in December 2016, which means then the minister and cabinet and so on have sufficient time for us to be able to publish it for implementation by March 2017, which is what the minister has indicated in this discussion. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the presentation.
Chair, thank you very much for clarifying how this is going to work and the fact that it already is working. However, when countries normally embark on massive developments of their higher education systems like this, they do it with a massive budget. And what I worry about and have continually worried about in terms of this department is it's trying to do things that it doesn't have money for. And, you know, this is going to go, the white paper went to the cabinet. Cabinet said, lovely, wonderful. Hardly any more money really came forward in a realistic sense for doing this in the proper way. And I fear that the same thing is going to happen again. We'll have a wonderful, fancy plan, and then we'll keep running short of money in order to implement it really in its fullest, richest sense of the term. So at what point are you going to say to Treasury, if you either approve this plan and fund it, or we're not going to do it? Do you not have to put your feet down?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just to understand this organogram on slide 22, where is the PMT for you? Or am I misunderstanding this number? Because I see the PMT is going to be appointed between July and December 2015 to December 2016. So where exactly and who actually heads that up? As I'm saying, the minister, then the steering committee, which is set up by the DG, and then the coordination team is set up by DDG yourself, Dr. Parker. So if I could just get some more clarity around that. And then in terms of the costing of this entire process, what is the cost of this process, and is it in line with your norms or benchmarks going forward? And then the last thing is just a plea, Chair, to say, well, throughout this process, if the portfolio committee can be kept updated as to the progression of the process, where are we with that, and so that and chairperson that we can also fulfill our roles in whether it is doing pieces of legislation and so forth.
From my side, in the presentation, Dr. Yu referred to the community education and learning colleges, which have been in the process of being established. Now, the CMT and UTS, have they been established in the 9 provinces, or they are in the process of being established in the 9 provinces? So they are clear on exactly what this is talking about. I know after the CMT,
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and to the Honourable Members for the question. I think maybe just to start off with the issue of the implementation once we've provided this plan and developed the plan. We all understand that there are financial limitations, and that's why we need to really understand what it will take
to do these things that have been put into the various documents that have come out of various departments and even our own white paper. So the work is really important to do. We need to understand what it will take, what a rollout might be, what our current fiscal constraints are, and what will be doable and what won't be doable. Obviously, we will then go to Treasury to ask them for additional funding. However, it doesn't stop us from implementing the plan, but we will at least know what we can implement and what we can't implement, and we'll be able to put those into our ATPs in ways in which we'll be able to monitor our progress in relation to the funding that is made available. This is one of the things that I think didn't happen the last time we had a national plan, which was the National Plan for Higher Education in 2003. All of those things were put there, but there wasn't funding that was clear. It wasn't understood what would fund all that. And then since then, we've become the new department, and we've taken on these various aspects, and we haven't known this. So I think that's the importance of doing the plan. So it may not be that we can achieve everything that comes out in the plan in the long, by that time, but at least we'll know, given what the funding requirements are. And I think that's a very important progress for us in the department. Just in terms of how much funding has been made available for this, we have a budget of $10 million to develop the plan. We feel is realistic. It's going to be over 18-month period. And a fair amount of that is for the resources that we have to get in, because we can't expect people to come and do the work without being paid. It's not a voluntary thing. And we do sometimes work like that when we're busy developing something, we get voluntary assistance. But this is not voluntary, so we do have that. In terms of the appointment of the project management team, the project management team sits in two places in the scanogram. The one is in the coordination team. They're there full-time. They're working full-time on this. They're there in the coordination team. And then they're also there in the task team oversight group, because they are the people who are going to be working full-time on this. They're going to be doing all the organization of meetings and bringing together everything. The reason why we're appointing a writer is that we need, even though the various parties are going to produce research and do things, we need one writer that's going to pull everything together to create one single voice in the end to this plan. In terms of the person that's been identified and appointed, the person that's been appointed is somebody who understands both higher education, who understands the system more generally, and has also been a person in government. She was previously a chief director in the department, and is currently working at JET at the moment, but she's going to be seconded back to us. They're appointing her in a contract position for the 18-month period to lead this process. So that person is being appointed right now. From the 1st of July, the project management team will start working towards this output. In terms of the, I think that's it. The community college issue, I think Professor Mr. Patel can respond to that. He's just been promoted to their position.
How
many DC?
When can I collect my citation? Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think in terms of the 9 community education training colleges, let's be clear. On the 1st of April, the following happened. We don't have the FETX anymore, nor do we have the Adult Basic Education and Training Act. We have the Continuing Education and Training Act. On the day, on the 1st of April, all the adult education and training centers became community education and training colleges, from 3,150. But at the same time, we merged all of those per province into one community education and training college. So currently, the 9 community education and training colleges are established in the provinces. They exist. The minister has published a gazette establishing them. They have the location. So, Chairperson, in order to, I think Mr. Parker was referring to in the process of being established, but that's a longer phase out. We currently have 9 legal entities
called Community Education and Training College. With community learning centers. Yes, you
see.
It's a community education and training college. We can call it the Edmund Center. It's one for just the Jurassic personality in terms of the legislature. And then each college has under its community learning centers, which will be the old AS centers. So, I mean, the reason is it will be impossible to manage 3,150 entities. If we had converted each one, if each one of the adult education training centers remained altruistic, it would have just been crazy. So we have nine, and with very powerful governance structure for programs, as well as an administrative hub to manage those AX, as well as AX centers within each province. And as time goes on, and as the pilots will be another particular process, is that we will then expand to at least one for local municipality.
Do you understand, Honourable Member?
Yes.
Let me clear this. One college and a local entity are coming to this one college. So how many entities do you have in the province? Are you able to answer that question?
We can get you the numbers for province. They're not entities, Chairperson. They are learning centers. They don't have a juristic personality. So there's 3,000, yeah, there's 3,150 in total across the country. They are all the A centers. Sometimes one person with one classroom or using a community resource.
On the chair, perhaps I can answer that. It's not a consultation process over that particular year. We're looking at the development of the plan, and there'll be ongoing consultation in the year to July 2016. Then we're looking at the further consultation process in order to understand and develop and finalize and gazette the plan by March 2017. So by July 2016, we will already have a plan. We will understand what the key financial issues are at that particular point. But I think we must also understand that the sort of thin process to National Treasury, this is a process that can go to 2030 in terms of the rollout of the plan. It's probably going to be in... We'll put an initial bidding process in 2017, July 2016, in order for us to look at that, but then it will be resubmitted in July 2017, because this is an annual process in line with the plan itself. So there are certain things we are really quite aware of, and the CFO maybe can respond to that, because we're already very aware of, for example, the need for funding for the SAP. It's not something that it's only a, this process is about coordinating and aligning these issues. But perhaps the CFO could add to that.
CFO?
I can't really or don't really want to add to what Dr. Falk is saying. I think just to make the process clear, indeed, yes, there are questionable things. I think that's already funded in the system. And it's a matter of how those are implemented and whether there are any changes towards that in terms of priority areas or in terms of strategies. Then secondly, we already had a meeting with the minister also to prioritize specific areas that need attention. So we will also, as far as possible, obviously with Treasury approval and as part of the 2016 NDF process that is starting now, look into those areas, look into reprioritization, and also looking into the areas that we can already request additional funding. But I think as the plan is finalized, certainly that would fit in with our NDF processes and our building processes, and that will not stay behind. Thank you, Chair.
I think another strategic move is to have living tests to have the data trader being represented at the steering committee level so that it is the type of company to fund. I'm sure you will be also going to be steering committee. So, the strategic to have in this, just to make my way, the development will be also aligned with the administration. Then the analysis of consultation system. Which structure of these ones will be doing the analysis? Is it a steering committee or you will appoint a special team to analyze? And this is a special team, I'm sure you will get an expert in that special team. So why 3 months to analyze?
Perhaps I can just explain the process. When something is published for public comment, you have to give, in terms of the legal process, at least a month for gathering, for individuals and to actually put in the comments. So we would have to give a month for the various organisations and individuals and anyone out there who wants to make comments, Then it would be a process of taking all those comments, analysing all those comments, putting them into a grid and so on, and then bringing it to the steering committee to say, these are all the comments, which comments are valid comments, which comments are not valid comments, how do we manage this process, and then it would have to go back to the writing team to change that the plan. So it's a month to actually get the comments in, it's a month to analyze comments and to get decisions on those comments, and then it's a month to rework and fix this thing so that it's ready for the minister to approve. So that's why 3 months. And then just in terms of that process of analysing the comments, it's the project management team, together with the chairs of the various task teams, would be the key resources that would work on the analysis of the information that comes in. So obviously the various branches within the department will also have a part of it and have input.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that very strong motivation for additional funds will go into the 2017 bid process for the bigger additional funds. The 2016 process will be done this year, and you know, obviously it's in terms of what we already know. Sorry, the 2018 process I'm talking about, the 2018 process. So I think it's a matter of how this process works going forward, but we have to give this sufficient time to ensure that we develop a plan that's really robust.
Thank you.
What I was going to say is that your point that you make about putting the parliamentary budgeting processes within a particular cycle is taken well, because I think this should also serve as an example of how the executive and the legislature works together in terms of the whole issue of VRR particular process. And it may mean that at that point, rather than looking at Treasury as being the one that will fulfill those objectives, so I think they will have to be reworking within that cycle, which will be the graphic senior management. So that it forms part of your process for lobbying and support, if the things that you like, that you can then take to the appropriations committee and other particular parliamentary processes.
Thank you, thank you very much. It does look like it's come to the end of our engagement. Thank you very much for your time.